Global gedacht, der Podcast, der die Welt auf den Kopf stellt.
Hello and welcome back to a new episode. The year is coming to an end, and before that, we would like to take a look on the elections here in South Africa. They took part in May 2024. And for this interview, I invited Lupilele. Lupilele and I, we met each other through a friend, and she is part of the party here in South Africa, the EFF. This means Economic Freedom Fighters. And today, surprise, we will talk about the elections and also the coalition and about the different parties, especially the ANC, the African National Congress. Nelson Mandela will be also part of the interview, but I think, especially for the German listeners, you might get to know a new perspective or another perspective on this person. So enough from my side and back to the interview.
Hi Lupilele.
Hi Kalita, how are you?
I'm good, what about you?
I'm very well this morning.
It's so good to have you here today. Yeah, please introduce yourself. What are you doing for living here in
Klebacha? Okay, so my name is Gwanga Lupelele Mapicha. Very nickname here. I am 29 years of age, born here in a small town in the Eastern Cape. It's called Queenstown. Kind of moved a lot when my mom was finding her feet. So then I moved to Mthatha at some point. At some point I was in boarding school in Barclays, still in the Eastern Cape. And then when she found her feet, she was like, come to Joburg. And then she took me, and then I've been in Joburg since. Then post high school, I was like, let me go find my feet. Let me move alone and be independent. And so I moved from Joburg to PE to further my studies. And I've been here since, really trying to find, navigate adulthood here in Klebacha.
You know how to do this click. I still don't know how to do
I'm Xhosa. It is clicks and clicks our things. So okay. It's like,
I'm still
you're
going to
get it.
So
you're gonna, by June, we'll come back here and you'll be saying and all these things. You'll be perfect. I promise you.
Perfect. Yeah, it sounds like you moved a lot. So what did you study here in PE?
My PA. Well, I kind of started with my LLB. Because I wanted to be a lawyer, like the ones in the suits and every other series that we've watched. Then I was like, no, I don't want to be in court. I really am a social studies student. I'm very interested in the social environment, the social life of everything and how people behave and stuff. So sociology would be something that I'd want to look into, and philosophy. So I didn't know about it, by the way, when I was in high school. I really thought I need to be a corporate honey and do corporate things. And then I got to university and I learned about this academic space for social studies. And I was like, hey, this is nice. So I moved there because of that. So I was like, no, research and just learning is just my thing more than your honor and saving criminals. I don't really think I have passion for that one, because I feel like everybody is justified somehow, which can be like my downfall in law faculty. I feel like, yeah, so I kind of just left that one.
Okay, interesting.
Might go back, but like, a lawyer, I don't think so. As a lawyer, I don't think so, but understanding the law better would be the reason why I go back there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I see. And when did you start to being active in politics? Or what was also the reason for that? Did you, for example, grew up with your mother who was quite political active, or
no.
How did it start?
No, not even. So growing up, when I moved to Mthatha with my grandparents, my grandfather was a former member of the ANC, like the MK, Khonto. He was a miner back in the days.
think you have to explain what the
ANC is. Was a wing. ANC is African National Congress. It is our, well, it's been our ruling party post-apartheid. So now we are under GNU, meaning it's coalition of parties. But before, for the longest time, they've been our ruling party, right? So leading up to liberation, our people really fell into the ANC. It was their party. So my grandfather was part of that, right? And then because it took a lot from him and he was never there and stuff, my grandmother did not like politics at all. And she really didn't want us to explore that option because she thought it really made people just shut down and be what she would think is heartless. But it's understandable then because they were under apartheid and there were a lot of fighting. So I understand why she felt like that with my grandfather. So I didn't have any political influence growing up because my grandmother sheltered us from that. So, and then I went to high school and I wanted to be a writer. I wanted to write novels, fiction. I was really obsessed with John Green. So I wanted to do literature. I wanted to go study in England to be a writer. I was literally seeing my life doing that. But then in reading, I then stumbled upon our South African history. And then that was like, okay, there's it happening. And then it connected a lot of dots as far as understanding what a specific policy is. Like, for example, our constitution. Growing up, it is just you learn that there's a constitution and it has your rights and you have your responsibility. And that is just that you have rights and your rights have responsibilities. And then when you grow and you learn about politics, you understand how we have the constitution and why we have the constitution. Then, yeah, this is how I moved into the space. And then when I was a teenager, I used to attend all these meetings that would be in our locations. And I didn't like, I'm not going to lie and say I liked how politicians were. I just enjoyed watching a female specifically being so vocal and standing in front of people and commanding attention. I really enjoyed seeing that a young girl or a female can be that powerful in those kind of spaces and be listened to. And I was like, you know what? I am going to be the first president of South Africa, female president. And then, yeah, that's how I just got into that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you still think you can become the president of South Africa?
You know what? It's not a dream. I don't dream about it anymore.
It's also a lot of responsibility, I guess.
Yes. Then it was like, I thought I was going to be like those princesses in those movies that, you know, people respect you and you don't have to do much and you look pretty. But now that I understand what it means, it's just like, I would, but I'm not going to fight and, you know, remove people from my way to get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
Understand? Yeah. As long as I'm making an impact and I am changing lives, that's all that matters at this point.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also just to see the women in politics as an inspiration for you, right? I mean,
yes.
Yeah.
That's the good. First person that I was like, always powerful before I met politicians and stuff was my pastor. She was a female. And I was like, what? You are speaking alone in church and like everybody's listening to men and female. And I was like very intrigued about this thing. And like, because I am from the rurals where I have my duties as a female and men have their duties. And in African cultures, the woman is a subordinate, like they're not the heads, they don't dominate. So when you go to those spaces and you see that you can take charge, it does something to you and you're like, you know what? I think I want that. Mm-hmm. I really like that, actually.
So nice that you had these role models in your life.
Yes. I guess. Okay. I, yeah.
And now you're also part of the party, right? The EFF, the Economic Freedom Fighters.
Mm-hmm.
And before we met for this interview, you told me that you are
the secretary.
Thank you. In Summer Strand, right?
Summer Strand, yes.
Yeah, so for all the listeners who are not here from PE, Quebeca, Summer Strand is like a region here in the city, like a district. Yeah, just for
it's a suburban area. Mm. It's close to our university, Nelson Mandela University. I am stationed there as the secretary, basically an administrator of the ward. Ward one. So I'm the administrator and the chairperson. So my duties are just administrative. I am the engine. This is what we call an engine of the organization. Nothing can move if I do not administrate it. Yeah. So that is my duty.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And why did you choose the EFF? So what I saw, there are so many parties here in South Africa, right? The main party is the ANC. Uh-huh.
And then the DA.
Yeah.
But then the MK and then the EFF.
What why made the EFF? You to choose especially this party?
As I said, my family kind of had beef with the ANC for a very long time. I didn't mention that. When I grew up and then I moved with ANC comrades, our brothers in the struggle. So when you're going to hear me use comrade a lot because it's like the language that I'm so used to. So with the ANC, I don't know. I was just like any other South African person. I was like over the ANC. I would not join it because, I don't take away the history, right? And what they did for their country. But we've moved and we evolved. And I do not think ANC is the party for us, especially the new generation. It's filled with old people, historians that do want to claim their space, justified because they fought for our country. But I believe that now it is our chance to take over. Mm-hmm. Do you understand? And the EFF created that space for the youth to say the youth must lead, and it spoke to me. I think that it has so many similarities to the ANC, because the ANC is the mother party, obviously, of all these. It birthed a lot of parties in South Africa, but with those parties moving, the formation of those parties, there was like this one thing that triggered them, and then they detached from the ANC. And so when that detachment of the former president, the former UP president of the ANC, which is Julius Malema, happened, this was during the Zuma reign. So Julius Malema was then expelled from the party, and there was a lot happening. And a lot of people, a lot of cadres detached from the organization. And I was one of those people who just, I detached Julius because I believed in Julius more than I believed and those old men that were there. Mm-hmm. So this is how we came here. And we were in the EFF, and we've been in the EFF since. So I signed my first membership in... when did I sign it? 2017? Yeah.
2017. Okay. Mm-hmm. Still? Or like...
I mean, the party is 11 years old.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the party is 11, and I got in like 3 years after. Because I really didn't want to... I was a supporter, but I was not a member. So in 2017, I became a member and I was active, and then I moved like that. Mm-hmm. And it's been like that since.
And maybe can you put it in a context for our listeners? So the ANC is also called like Mandela's party, right? So after apartheid ended, Mandela
became our first president.
Yeah. And he was part or like the leader of the ANC, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So post-apartheid, when South Africa decides that to cease fire and say, we are not fighting, we are bringing peace, Nelson Mandela was the president, the first black president in South Africa. His secretary was actually Cyril Ramaphosa.
So now the president.
Now president, yeah. Was a secretary. When Nelson Mandela came into the party, then everybody was calling him the Messiah, the one that saved South Africa. And then we moved. They went into GNU, by the way, which is the coalition that we're in. So post-apartheid, you went into GNU where Nelson Mandela was the president, and then they had to share power with the National Party, which was the party that was there during apartheid. So they decided, you know what, let's let's have a coalition to make everybody happy.
Although it was basically necessary, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, that's what I also read.
Yeah, there is a point, they got to a point where, like, let's get together and find a middle ground. And that was their middle ground. Even though it didn't last, but that was their middle ground.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand? So, yeah. Nelson Mandela was the first president post-apartheid, which was under the ANC. And so this is the foundation of, well, the ANC is an old party, but that's when they came into power, and that is why they know now as the Mandela Party.
Yeah.
It's not really, but it is.
Yeah,
he was the first president, so yeah, we take it.
And I think, but maybe I will open this topic another episode, because I would, for my feeling in Germany or in general, like in the Western world, Nelson Mandela, as you said, he's like the messiah and he's mm-hmm. very celebrated. But mm-hmm. since I'm here in South Africa, so often I hear, yeah,
I mean, it is a group work.
But there are more perspectives on Nelson Mandela.
Yes, yes. Yes, it's an onion. It has a lot of layers. So
it's an onion.
It has a lot of layers.
Yeah,
there's a lot happening. It's not Mandela, guys. We had Tambo. We had Mbeki. We had a lot of cadres in the ANC that made this happen. It's just Nelson Mandela was the party leader, and he was arrested for 27 years, and basically he was the one who was willing to stand in front of white people and black people and say, guys, stop the fight. And this mm-hmm. is why he is largely celebrated. But the liberation movement, it had more people. It was not just him.
Yeah.
Okay. You know.
Yeah, I try maybe within the new year to do an episode about it, to get this perspective here from.
Yeah, actually. Yeah. It would be great to introduce our other leaders.
Mm-hmm.
In this party, and you understand that it was just not, it was not Mandela only.
Yeah.
It was everyone else too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. I was wondering, what is like your motivation to be active in politics? Because my impression of politics, it doesn't matter if you're in Germany, in South Africa, what, it's always quite exhausting, right? And you need to be very patient until you see a change, but still it's super necessary that there are people who do it.
Mm-hmm.
But what motivates you doing this work?
You know what? Being an activist is not easy. People would then assume that you would have like exterior motives or anything like that. But I am driven by love, really. I want to help. Like, I want to see people in a better position, maybe in the same level as us or higher. So I mean this by this child that is in Makai in the rural areas that does not have the same opportunities as us. I want to help those people. Those are my kind of people. I want to bring them to the table. I want to have the same conversation with them. I'm not empowering or uplifting. I'm just assisting. Usually people use these things if you want to inspire people or want to empower them or something like that. But no, I want to help. It's just something that you're doing on a daily also. So I'm not really a politician more than I am an activist.
Okay.
See, this is how I also led in the Institution of Higher Learning as the SRC. It was not about the position or being known as a politician of some sort. I really just wanted to get the power to assist my people.
Mm-hmm. And this is why you call yourself as an activist.
Yes.
Okay, interesting. So now we talked about you, about your way becoming an activist, mm-hmm. right? Being part of the EFF, what motivates you? And the main topic of our episode today is the elections in South Africa. They happened in the end of May this year, 2024. And we already talked about the ANC, right? And I think information, which is also quite important since the first elections for everybody here in South Africa, the ANC was always the ruling party.
Mm-hmm.
But this year was the first time that the ANC needed a coalition.
Yes.
You called it the GNU.
GNU
is?
Government of National Unity.
Thank you. So I have two questions. One question is, and I think you already answered this in the beginning, why the ANC lost so many votes this year. And the other one is also that we're looking to the coalition partners, especially to the DA, the Democratic Alliance.
Yes.
Because it's known as a white party. And
yes.
Yeah, maybe first of all, let us start with why the ANC lost so many votes and also why they started the coalition with the DA.
Okay. So the ANC, my understanding, I believe that they lost power because the party broke from the inside. So, yes, people didn't vote for it because of the corruption and all those things, but it has always been like this for 30 years, and they've been voting for the ANC. But the difference in 2024 was the introduction of the Umkhonto Party, which is the MK. So, the MK is a party led by our former president. The former president, you remember the one that I spoke about that expelled Julius Malema in the ANC? He now has a party, which is Umkhonto. So people from the ANC. So basically when the Umkhonto movement, the Umkhonto party was introduced, people from the ANC that were Zuma's people related more to it. And this then means there are Zuma people within the ANC that are not going to vote for the ANC, and they've been voting for the ANC all their lives. So now you lose voters there. And also in the EFF, there are people that really like Jacob Zuma. And so when that party started, a lot of people just moved with it because they somehow believe that Zuma was better than Ramaphosa and we want Zuma back.
But still, I don't really understand it. So now the president is Ramaphosa. Mm-hmm. In the last period of ruling, he was also the president. Before this, for two times, Jacob Zuma was the president. Mm-hmm. But he was kicked out of the ANC, right?
Not kicked out, but he finished his term.
Okay.
So he did both his terms and then he finished them. And then he is going through a lot of courts for his crimes, in inverted commas. So there's that fight within the party. And then Zuma started his own party. No one really understands why, right? No one gets it because he still wants to be a member of the ANC. And he was going through his disciplinary hearing, which ended last month. That is where they told him that, no, you're not coming back. But he still wanted to be a member of the ANC while having the Umkhonto, the Sizwe party. And the reason why he would go to DC is because he took voters and he made voters vote the other way when he was an ANC member.
But still, he was so blamed for corruption, Jacob Zuma. And also what I read, that since Jacob Zuma was the president, the voters for the ANC really got low, or definitely lower than in the beginning. Or that there's like a tendency, you can see that it became less and less. And I'm still wondering, because the party now with Zuma is Umkhonto, right? And they are like the third strongest party in South Africa. But so in my mind, it's just like he's incurred and he's blamed for something. And there are these things about corruption. But there's still such a big support of the people here in South Africa. Just surprises me.
They love
him. Let us put it like that.
They love him. I also do not. I do not hate Jacob Zuma, right? There's a lot of things that he's done, and I believe he needs to account for all of them, because no one is above the law in South Africa. But I also see why they like this charismatic old man. This man is, you know how they view Nelson Mandela in the Western side? That's how he's viewed here. People like Jacob Zuma, and it's not even a joke, and it's not even in the party leaders in South Africa. I think Zuma is the most liked.
Interesting.
Yeah, because black people specifically related to him more, because with our president, it is believed that he is leaning towards the white people more than the black people, meaning that he is really, I don't want to use white supremacy very loosely, but he's seen as a capitalist of some sort. He's making money and he does not care about the people. This is how he's viewed. And Zuma would play his gimmicks with people and you'd see that he's telling them that he wants to help them. He's a people's person, you know, even the things that he's done. But I don't want to say he's corrupt, right? So there's this sensitive line within this, because now Ramaphosa is working with the biggest businessmen in South Africa, Oppenheimer and Rupert and all those people, and those people are white capital, like they own white capitalism. They own our country, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And when Zuma was in power, he was moving with the Guptas.
Guptas, what's that?
It's the Arabs. So yeah, they prompt by the that. So it's a different ball game altogether. It boils down to what we had as the with our colonization.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, we were colonized by different people. So black people warm up to someone that looks like them more than someone that does not look like them.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the vulnerability of our country, from where we come from. So when you see Ramaphosa sitting with the Ruperts and the Oppenheimers, the whole country is like, guy is selling us out, he's bringing us back here, and you are moving forward. And Zuma was...
It's giving you flashbacks, kind of,
yeah,
history.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. Historically, he is viewed as someone not on the right side, right? And then Zuma was on the other side.
Okay.
So Zuma was on the Guptas, and he would be known to be a good, not friend, but alliance with Russia and all these other states. He was not really, he didn't have a Western obsession.
Yeah.
You understand? Ramaphosa is a people pleaser.
Mm-hmm.
Right? In the sense that he is not going to offend everyone and he's going to bring everybody together, like Nelson Mandela or support. And the reason why in South Africa you'll hear, because everybody's like, yeah, we really didn't want this unity, we just wanted the land, right? And Zuma is one of those that he wanted the freedom for our people, and he was not,
maybe Zuma was not a people pleaser, he was more...
He was a Trump.
Forward.
Protecting the country.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was protecting in the people of, in the faces of our people. He really didn't mince his words when it comes to a certain group of people, which is the capital, our owners of the country.
Maybe on this point, we should inform the people that how is it about 80% of the country is 10% of the white hands?
Yes.
Is it like that?
Yes, basically.
Maybe I will just look up the numbers.
The minority has the most capital and then the majority does not.
And although apartheid ended like 30 years ago, but still, when you're here in South Africa, I'm just your visitor, you're living here, but the apartheid, you can still really see it, that they're the black people, the colored people, the white people. Mm-hmm. And
So when apartheid ended, the killing ended, but the most systems were still in place, right? The economy is still where it was, and that is really the bone of contention.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why, which is the topic, the point that we want to get to with Julius Malema and not being liked and said to be a racist or whatever the word is going to be used to.
That he is a racist against the whites.
He's being taken to court every day.
Shame.
Humans right to show.
So just as an information, there's no racism against white people.
There isn't, you know.
But, yeah.
Our history forces us to dabble into racial segregation and racial, you know. Yeah. And you would see it as racism because the topic is not, I'm not my hair or I'm not Ndondo, and you are talking about the white people coming in Africa and taking our land in South Africa and colonizing us. And that is the history of South Africa. And when I say it, when I say it like that, then it's touchy subjects like, but it is history. And it's something that we need to acknowledge that it happened for us to move, right? So when we dabble into those conversations, because of what happened in that peace unity that was done post-apartheid, when we said we are ending all these things, it really meant that you are going to move forward as unity. But when you look at it, Kayeta, if you were going to, let's say, if you're South African, you would have lived through your parents' benefits and your great parents' benefits, right? So you have the upper hand already. And the problem here is redressing those issues of the past. And then it feels like you are stepping on people's toes when you have these conversations, right? Because we are saying, for example, bring back the land. And bring back the land is not saying your grandparents must give me the land because it belongs to me. You are saying give it to the state, let everybody share power, let everybody share wealth, you know? And that's basically what it is. But now because of the vulnerability again of our country, never mind the black side, where it's very vulnerable. And when they see a white person in power, they start jumping. They think we are back in those days. But at the same time, we need to look at the POV of the other side, which they had these benefits all their lives. They lived comfortably. And now we are saying, Chumi, you must share.
Give us back our land.
You must share.
Yeah.
You know? And now it becomes touchy now because you are saying they must bring back the land and then they must live within means like everybody else. You know, let's share power, let's share wealth. And that's the problem here.
Yeah, but when you have the power and when you have the wealth, sharing is not so easy.
It's easy. I even made a dummy model, friend. I said, let's say I take your phone, you take my phone. Mm-hmm. No, let's say I take your phone, right? And you fight about it and you pull each other's hair because you want your phone back, right? And mommy comes in and is like, stop fighting. Your siblings do this. And you're like, okay, fine. We are not going to fight. We're not fighting now, but I still have your phone. So you're like, okay, can I have my phone back? And I'm like, no, but mommy solved this already. We, you know, why are we still having this discussion? And they're like, no, but you still have it. You understand? So the problem is still there.
It's still not
the
fair.
The things that was fixed is the fight. And the fight was not the main point. The main point was here. So we're coming back here and we're like, I don't want to fight. Let's share. Mm-hmm. You know, that basically is what it is. That's SA politics summarized. So, yeah.
And also what I read that the World Bank says, I don't know which year, that South Africa is still one of the country with the highest inequality, right? And I mean, the criminality here in this country, so I'm living here now since nearly 2.5 months, the criminality is such a big topic, the poverty, then also that the unemployment is such a big topic. And I think these are all kind of the results of the apartheid. I don't know if you can put it that simple like that, but there's still so many people living in townships, and the townships were created during the apartheid where the black people had to live, and now they're still living there. So, so maybe going back to the election. So now we have the 2nd of December. So the elections have been like 6 months ago, more than six months. And the main topics what I read were poverty, unemployment, and crime. So these were like the main topics. What do you think, or what is your impression, what the coalition, the GNU, is doing against it? Do you have the impression that there's like a positive change since they are ruling? So are they kind of putting effort into it, or what is your impression so far about the ruling people these days in South Africa?
I think they still yet to find their feet.
Okay.
If they are going to find it. But they haven't found any common ground at all in the 6 months. because obviously there are different types of parties that are involved there with different agendas. They're completely different from each other, so obviously they are not going to get along well. So the GNU, the coalition, comprises of the African National Congress, which is the ANC, which is ruling the previously ruling party. And then we have the Democratic Alliance, the Democrats. So you can just imagine the Republicans are working with Democrats. Ideologically, it's a mess already, right? But we move. Right? Okay, and then we have the Freedom Front Plus. That is a white party. It's a poor party. It's an Afrikaans party. So,
but the DA is also a white party, right?
Yeah, but they don't want to admit that.
Oh.
Yeah, they, you know, they don't call themselves a white party. They're Democrats.
Mm.
Yeah, they're liberals, right? So Freedom Front Plus is clear that they are a white party. So yeah, the PA, Patriotic Alliance, that one includes former inmates. So it takes, their minister is even a former inmate. He is in parliament. So there's a Patriotic Party. And a lot of these small parties, right? Rise Africa, BOSA, which is led by the former president of the DA, which is Musi Maimane. So they are all the small parties in the DA, but the main two is like the DA. And I'm saying they're finding their feet because, one, they don't seem to agree with their policies, their policy changes. As far as NHI, a health bill, they are in disagreement with that one, and then also in disagreement with the Bella bill.
So many names, shame.
The Bella bill. So the basically the NHI is like, I want to compare it to the state insurance, health insurance. Everybody uses the same hospital, the same health insurance, and then those who pay more, they get more. But like everybody is going to be somewhat equal as far as our health is concerned, our health sector is concerned. And so now obviously people were like, no, we do not want to go to a public hospital, leave us alone, we want to medicalize and blah, 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 blah. So they're rejecting it completely,
mm-hmm.
the NHI. And then the Bella bill, which is, I want to give you an idea of what the Bella bill is, so you can maybe have an idea of why it's being rejected. So the Bella bill, is it? The Bella bill, it's a basic education law amendment bill, right? It's a legislature that is aimed at strengthening the governance within South African education sector. So it wants to make grade R in kindergarten compulsory. So early development is going to be compulsory. It is not now. So free education starts from grade one. So they're saying that because our people can't afford to take their little ones, their 3-year-olds to school and they stay with them, we should invest more on early child development. So that's the main thing. It doesn't sound bad, you know?
Yeah.
The second one is language policy. The bill requires school to apply the same standard for admission of learners and promote the use of South African Sign Language as an official language for learning purposes. Still not bad.
Yeah, okay.
Right? And then inclusive admission policy. The bill contains provisions for improving school with admission policies, particularly with respect to vulnerable learners like children of undocumented migrants. So every child must go to school.
Mm-hmm.
Still cool, still cute, right?
We can work with it.
Accountability and regulation. The bill promotes greater accountability with respect to the role of parents and caregivers in ensuring children attend school. So if your child doesn't go to school, you get arrested.
Oh.
Right? It's cool. Your child must go to school.
Yeah.
You can't reject
this. It's also like that in Germany.
Right?
I don't know if they have to go to prison, but yeah. At least there will be punishment.
But there's accountability of some sort.
Definitely.
Yes. But. And then prohibition of corporal punishment. No kid will be hit. No thing will be beaten. They are rejecting it. They did a march, the Freedom Fund, with the ETA. They held a march against the Bella Bill. Because the Bella Bill will be introducing other languages in white schools. So in South Africa, we have our black schools. Schools that are known as black schools. These are our public schools, they're known as black schools because they teach our language and they a majority is like black people in that school. So now they're saying we are, let's broaden the scope and take our schools to other schools in Summerslin, in Wadwan. Let it be an inclusive school. Let it not be just Afrikaans and English as a medium language. Include everybody. And now the conversation is that they want to erase the Afrikaans culture in schools, and they're protecting it of some sort. Yeah. Yeah.
You cannot see my face, but my face looks confused.
I summarized the Bella Bill so that I can introduce this POV and you can see it. So they are saying not in our name. They do not agree to this thing. It does not make sense. Blah, 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 blah. You want to put these schools under the government and the government is failing. Yada, 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 yada. But the main issue here, you can see why they're rejecting it. Because now you are going to have Kasi kids from where you're working and they're going to be studying at white schools, and they're not comfortable with those kind of settings. And so it goes back to the first coalition that they had, which failed because they were not agreeing on policies. And they were not agreeing on anything as far as ministerial positions were concerned. And so the National Party pulled out when they saw that they were not in agreement with anything. And the things that the NP wanted to do were not recognized. Understandably, we were post-apartheid. Whatever the NP wants, it's going to be side-eyed. Like, Chomi, really? You want to make demands now? So when they didn't get their way, they pulled out.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I'm saying these ones are finding their feet, and I'm not sure if they're going to find them, is because already 5 months in, they're already having the same problems that they had in 2000 with the first GNU. So it's not starting nice. It really is not starting well for them. But good luck. It's not smooth sailing at all.
Could you imagine that there might be new elections in South Africa? Let's see what the future will bring us.
Let's see. But do I believe they're going to survive this coalition? It's not promising because they don't agree, and obviously they are not going to agree because it's different ideologies and they are trying to rule the country. Mm-hmm. You understand? So as far as their governance is concerned right now, and corruption and poverty and increasing employment, they haven't been doing much of those. They've just been fighting amongst themselves, really.
Yeah, I see. So what we have done now, we look to the past a little bit of South Africa. We look to the present a little bit in South Africa. I mean, this one episode, I think it's not enough to cover all of the topics in South Africa because I think it's super complex.
It is.
As you said, it's a huge onion with a lot of peels.
It has a lot of layers, because when you ask me a question, you're like, for example, you're like, what do I think of my president? I'm going to take it from where he was in the ANC. Now I'm thinking, where do I cut? Where do I start talking about him? Because there's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of layers in this thing. And it can take the whole day, the whole year even, analyzing South African politics. But the basic thing is we have so many parties and everybody wants to have a view. And now where we are right now, we are saying they must help us. They must help each other help us, basically. So they must work together in making South Africa what we want it to be. But as far as that goes, we haven't seen much other than realizing that, hey, man, everybody's corrupt here, and it's not just the ANC. We have seen the DA being seen in a light that they would not really like, because now when they marched to Fort Treka, where it has another historical background. So when white people white march there, it's just like, aibu, you know, aibu is an expression. It's like,
yeah.
come on, dude, you really are pushing us at this point, right? So I feel like when the DA moved to Freedom Front in that march, it raised a lot of eyebrows, especially in their constituency, because it is backhanded, really. It is uncalled for. And so we are seeing that, and we've also learned that this history that a lot of people don't understand, don't know. This means there was this conversation that I was having on social media where this guy was submitting books. This white guy was submitting books, the history of South Africa, saying that the actual history is that the white people came to South Africa and there was no people here. It was a no man's land. And then the Bantu people came in the 19th century and then they arrived and they saw them. And so everybody's a settler here. And I'm just like...
This person, did he go to university?
No, he's submitting in real journals. But at the same time, everybody can write a book. Yeah. To understand.
And but I just thought of he's like a professional historian.
He is. And you then understand that at some point, especially with me, I have this thing where when people say such things, I don't get upset first. I'm just like, maybe the reason you're behaving like this is because you believe in this. And you don't see the problem because your books taught you this history. And you feel like it is an attack when people introduce you to this part of this type of history where you're like, bro, you are a settler, you came here with food and you don't know this history because you feel like you came into a no man's land in Africa.
But I think it's, unfortunately, it's not something which is that uncommon. I think in general in Europe, the history about Africa, it's always starting when the white people came to South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what is kind of taught, then the history has started of Africa and not like that there was a history before and this is so stupid.
Who was going to write a book about Africa? We were not there.
Yeah.
We were introduced to writing these things when we were colonized. So of course you're not going to get history from the people that were there before colonizers.
Mm.
Right? You are going to get it post because that's when the writings and the... And all those information was gathered, right? So, you know what? It was interesting to hear that POV. And I respected him for bringing it forward to say, this is what I know as the history. And this is why I believe when you are attacking me, you are attacking me as an individual while we're all settlers. Now, our duty is to educate those people, make them unlearn what they've learned, really.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you do not understand the problem, you won't be there to fix it, or you won't be part of the people that are going to fix it. So the problem that we have now is to educate everyone of the problem that we have in South Africa so we can work together into... No one is going to go at this point. No one is going to be chased out of this country. We are living here, all of us. Our foreigners, our white people, our black people, we need to make this work. This is basically what it is right now. But in order for us to get a remedy, we must acknowledge what is the problem.
Yeah.
Which is basically what is not going to happen anytime soon. No one wants to say, yeah, I understand I had this part and I want to redo it by doing this. No one wants to come to the party as far as that is concerned. And that is the problem in South Africa.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's your point. So, because of the time, I see that we're already chatting for quite some time.
We are. And you are going to cut a lot of things, Sham.
Yeah, but that's fine. Maybe as last question for today, when you're looking into the future of South Africa, how... Do you look in the future in a positive way, in a negative way, or are you more like curious, let's see what's happening? How do you feel about it as a black South African?
I think we are, as far as South African politics are concerned, in a global stage, we are going to get the global platform, right? We have it already. I mean, Cyril Ramaphosa is G20 president for 2024. The previous one was Biden, and then the next one is going to be Luna. So already in the public, in the global stage already. And I think the recognition is going to be there. It's stressful. I'm saying it's stressful because now when we come into the conversation of global news, we are going to be exposed to the dark side of the global news, you know, as far as, you know, the Russia, the Ukraine things, mm-hmm. and the USA, Afghanistan, and all those things. Now we're coming to the party, we are like, hey guys, yeah, it's us. Now everybody's like, hey you, what, you know. So I think at some point we are getting the global recognition, but at the same time we need to be careful. You, when we're talking outside the podcast, you mentioned the EFF love for Russia and Vladimir Putin, mm-hmm. right? Those politics include a lot of people, right? So if we're saying that Russia, we're moving with Russia and moving with this, we know that there's that slate that moves with Ukraine and everything else. So we're exposing ourselves to global politics. Do I think it's the best thing for our economy? It is. Do I think we are ready? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, we are not a first world and we're really just developing. So exposure to those things can be intimidating, I think.
Maybe in 5 years I have to come back to South Africa and then we have to do another interview and
look back and see
what happens within the 5 last years.
But it's going to be interesting. Next elections are going to be...
In 5 years, right?
Mm-hmm. They're going to be different.
Okay.
They're going to be very different because we've been exposed to a lot as far as our parties are concerned, right? As I said, we've seen corruption within the DA, we've seen corruption within the ANC, we've seen the EFF breaking up, right? We've seen MK getting strength, but at the same time they're still fighting with the ANC. So next elections are going to be very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. I think it'll be, I think that is our next 1994 actually.
Okay.
Not this one. The next one. The next elections will be the next. It'll be very clear. I do believe it's gonna be very clear. It's an insightful year. It will be an insightful mm-hmm. 5 years, really. Yeah.
So I would come to an end now with you. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else you would like to add before we end this episode?
Let's see. No, actually, yeah. I think when people from outside the country search for the Economic Freedom Party, the Economic Freedom Fighters Party, they will see a lot of things and be like, hey, man, the EFF is known to be this and this. They're saying Julius is rude. They're saying he doesn't like white people. He doesn't like...
He wants to kill them.
He wants to kill them, you know. And now it is the... I mean, there's that happening. But now I feel like it's not understood. Do you understand? In a sense that what Julius Malema sings is not lyrics from his head. Right? It's not... He didn't compose anything. He didn't write. He can't even sing, by the way. They're just... It's just repeating what he's heard, like as a song. So the song in question, which it says, unalive, a boor, right? You would see it as hate speech because why you want to unalive people? But if it was genuine, we'd be in the streets unaliving people. But it is a struggle song. So the boor were a very... big part of our history, right, during apartheid. And during the apartheid, there were two sides of the coin. There was the colonizers and the colonized, right? And the cultures and how they moved is quite different also. The black people were at war, right? They didn't have power. They wanted liberation. So their songs were messages, right? Because there was some point in the history that they were not allowed to send out messages. So the artist decided to sing the messages so that it can be covered everywhere. Then that example is when Nelson Mandela, the story of Nelson Mandela was said by Brenda Fassie. And you'll listen to the song, 1976. She's literally telling you what happened to Nelson Mandela in a song, because that's how they were doing things. So even this one, it was a message from that time. And there are many others that were messages, do you understand? So post-apartheid, those were struggle songs. And when people sing struggle songs, they don't, now it's no longer a message. It is just a struggle song. It is paying homage to what happened, you know. So when you say, kill the boer, the farmer, it's a song now. It no longer carries that weight. It's like the stem.
Mm-hmm.
In the South, they call to come together and united we shall stand. When you look into the history of that, we were not united when that song came out, right? It was their song. But now, 2024, we are saying, we united, we shall stand. It's now a South African song. It's a national anthem. Do you understand what I don't know if I'm making sense. Our history, the things that happened in the past, which is our history, has been carried on to 2024, for example. There are things that existed then and they exist now, but now they're inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand? Like the stem, as I mentioned, the stem, even our rugby, Maboko Boko, the Springboks, it was a white sport.
Mm-hmm.
But now you see black people playing that sport, but it's still the same colors and the same gear and everything, but now it's inclusive of everyone. The stem also, it included the Xhosa language and the Zulu and the Sotho to include. It's still the same thing. It's just added. It was tweaked to accommodate everyone. So the struggle songs, unfortunately, you can't tweak the struggle songs because we can't say kill the black because we don't have farms. What are you going to kill? Like, where are you going to get me? Because you're not going to get me in my farm. Do you understand?
There's not much to get. Sorry.
So it's a thing where it's our history. And to say that if I sing this song, I'm being racist, it raises eyebrows because do you not know our history? I can sing it with you right now. I can talk about the killing of Chris Hani, which is one of our big people during the Mandela days. He is really a big struggle icon. We can talk about the killing of Chris Hani, but do we think, they're now songs. Do you understand? They carry no value, no weight at this point besides the historical value of it all. And so when you look at it and you're like, hey, but why are you singing this thing? You know, so like it's a thing, Iguti. I am not relieving, but I am paying homage to my history. It's like the Americans when they speak about Martin Luther King.
Mm-hmm.
You can't say when they're narrating that history, oh, they still back there, they still, you know, thinking that there's racism or something like that. No, it's their history. It's their Martin Luther King. It's their Rosa Park. It's history. And people looking back into history should not be seen as a racial slur.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand? You get what I'm saying?
I see your point. Yeah.
Yeah. So that basically it. And yeah, man, no shade to the Western countries, because this is a Western country podcast, by the way. Do you know this? So we said we wanted to infiltrate and we want to have a GNU. So the basis of everything else as far as BRICS and everything is concerned, we want a GNU with the world.
Yeah.
We don't want the Western world to be controlling everything. We are saying let's have a coalition. Let's all work together. Let's not listen to the people up like there's countries that are better than other countries in this world. We don't have better countries.
Thank you for telling us your story, your knowledge, sharing your perspective on South Africa and the politics and what is happening here, and also for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the end. I know the episode was quite long today, but putting the topic of elections in just one episode is quite a challenge, let's put it like that. And I hope, first of all, you enjoyed the interview as much as I did. And what I also really hope is that you got to know, like a new perspective on politics here in South Africa. If you want to give feedback or if you have any questions, please let us know and send us an email to podcast@massifunde.de or just contact us via Instagram. For your information, this will be the last episode for 2024, but don't worry, we are already planning for the next year, and in 2025 there will be more episodes waiting for you freshly from South Africa. So yeah, so stay safe, enjoy the rest of the year, and see you in January. Bye.